I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Nick McGuigan and Dr. Alessandra Gio, who are actually with me tonight for an event, Queering Accounting. And I've asked Nick and Alessandro to sit down with me to tell us a little bit about their queering accounting research, but also chat to them and their own experiences and what's brought them here with me today. So thank you, gents. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us. It's really kind.
Oh, no, my pleasure. I'm really interested first up. Can you tell us a little bit more about queering accounting and why this piece of research?
So I think what's really interesting about this work is so much of the work already being done is around inclusivity within the profession, around pride and having an inclusive environment. And what our work is trying to think about is maybe disrupting that inclusivity. So rather than us being included into what we think or what is quite prevalent as a heterosexual kind of environment, We're starting to think, well, hang on a minute, this idea of creativity and innovation and leadership, maybe there's something that the LGBTQI community could add in terms of value creation around what it means to be creative, what it means to innovate, and what it means to lead changes in the professional accounting service firms.
So what, Nick? Queer people could bring something interesting? We are breaking new ground today. Actually adding value, that's remarkable.
Right, that's what we think too. So we're really, really, really super excited about the project.
Yeah. Okay, and so queering accounting, so actually challenging norms in the profession. So how did this come about? What was the kind of thinking that brought you to this point where you're actually undertaking this project?
I think so much of the kind of questioning around what the future of accounting might be, and we know that we're moving towards creativity, we know we need to innovate, we need to think about what is relevant in the accounting profession into the future. And so it really started with what is the skill set required for accountants to move in that direction? And what could the LGBTQI community that has been relatively under-investigated actually bring to that conversation? And so really trying to open spaces for those voices to be present within accounting firms.
If I could just add one thing.
Yeah.
Especially in a very sort of conservative profession as accountant.
Yeah.
I mean, there's this famous paper in the research environment which says the typical accountant is white male, 40 years old with a white shirt. But, well, this is what has been gone forever. But we know that it's not all like this, and this cannot keep going even in the future. So we need new models, and we believe that LGBTQI people can help to face new challenges.
Okay. It's so interesting you say that, Alessandra, because although I'm not an accountant personally, I've been working in and around the accounting profession for a decade now, and really, until just a couple of weeks ago, I'd never even had a single conversation or heard of a conversation that was in any way related to LGBTI around, even enough around disruption. So it's quite fascinating that over a decade, this is the first time I'm having this conversation, and I don't think that's a unique experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. And from an academic perspective, there has been going on some research, but still early stage, and very much looking at more what firms talk about inclusivity and diversity, so like what they describe on the websites, what their policies, their first networks, but not much about what the LGBTQI community brings to the accounting profession, what's their view, and not just let them in a safe space, but what they can bring new to the table. So it's not to leave them in a reserve, but we need to disrupt this heteronormative perspective.
Sure, and you know, Alessandra, to your point around adding to the profession. I know that the two of you talk about creativity, leadership, and innovation. So, can you tell us a little bit about how a queer perspective can bring some new insights into those pretty critical kind of business issues and philosophies?
I think what's interesting is maybe potentially the LGBTQI life worldview is slightly different in some ways. I mean, if I think back to my experience, I mean, you push through and you create your own identity as such. I mean, you are kind of forced to in our society. You leave the parental boundaries and you start to create your own identity. And I think we're in a very privileged position as LGBTQI community to be able to do that. We have to find what that identity is, because we might the identity we've grown up with is not necessarily that applicable to us. And so I remember in my own past, we were going through that kind of, I was going through that journey, and so I was able to sort of discover a different kind of approach to the way that I might view the world. And we were kind of thinking, maybe would that kind of life worldview bring extra skills or bring different skills or different perspectives to the idea of creativity? And so what we're really interested in doing is looking at the variations in the LGBTQI identifying accountants' views of what they think creativity, innovation, and leadership is about, and then thinking about distilling models that might help us contribute to a broader conversation about those topics.
Okay. I mean, that's fascinating to think, isn't it, that something like a journey or a set of experiences that we could then personally identify as being painful or challenging or difficult. It's that thing in life, isn't it, that the things that cause you the most pain, when you flip it, that's actually your biggest asset.
Right,
so
absolutely.
So it's taking what a lot of people then would associate as being something that they've had to cope with and manage and deal with, often independently and on their own and without as much support, and saying, that's actually put me in a position to have unique skills and abilities that people who haven't been through that don't have.
Absolutely. More agile, more adaptable, able to change, able to create a story or a view and be able to bring that to fruition in some ways.
Okay. Oh, no, that's such a different way to think about it. It's always like flipping that challenge, isn't it? Well, I'm interested then, Nick, as to your personal journey. You mentioned there, you've mentioned a couple of times there your journey and what sort of brought you here. Can you tell us a little bit more about your experiences and what's brought you here today?
I can. So I guess in terms of where I left, so I'm from New Zealand originally, and in New Zealand I kind of did a lot of work around accounting. I studied accounting. I was interested in accounting. I was drawn to the kind of accountability aspect of accounting and kind of where we sit as a language and how powerful that is in business, but also in one's everyday environments. So I was very interested in how accounting translates to the everyday. And then I sort of started to study education, and that just got me totally hooked.
Right.
I think maybe just so dramatically threw myself into that education environment. And then I merged the two together in the UK. I did a PhD in accounting education. And in doing that, I was trying to unpack the life worlds of my students and really understand where they came from and what they could bring to the environment, to the room. And then during that PhD process, I discovered permaculture. And I did permanent agriculture and thinking about how we live within systems and systems design. And it totally changed my worldview of the way that I now look at the world.
Okay.
And it's sort of, I started to reflect around that permaculture holistic thinking and how that might apply to accounting and where we could start to move accounting language into different areas and be more creative with accounting. And so it kind of led to this project and the idea behind, actually, we need to own the words creative accounting again. And we need to be able to do something with that, because I think the future work, future jobs, future business, it's all going to be around creativity. If you're not creative, there's an algorithm that can fix that.
Yeah. Do you think that the profession and professionals are receptive to that, these messages around creativity, or is it something that is just so, there's been so much packaged around those concepts of creativity in accounting? Do you think we've got an awful lot still to overcome?
I think in general, in global conversations around the accounting profession, I think we realise that we need to be much more creative and we need to move into that space. And so they might not use the words like creativity, but they definitely own or are over the need to move in that direction.
Okay.
And I think what's really important and part of this work that we're doing is we're trying to optimistically vision what that creative future could look like. And I think it's all in around positive messaging and bringing people through into that process.
Okay, no, thank you, Nick. And I suppose just staying further with that, how were your experiences? I mean, if you take yourself back then as a queer person in accounting and finding education in academia as well secondarily, what were your kind of personal experiences? How did you kind of, what were your experiences as a queer person, first in accounting and then moving into academia, for example, in education?
I think probably it was completely mixed. So yeah. It was a mixture of both. There were really supportive, engaging environments in which I found myself in. And at the same time, there was quite isolated environments that I found myself in and adversity and these kind of things. I mean, I remember this time I was working in Sydney and I was up at the Museum of Contemporary Art. We had an event that we were running and it was a business networking event. And I remember a gentleman coming into the room and he made a comment to me and he said, "Oh, you must be the entertainment for the evening." Ugh. And so, and I think partly it's using humour and it's using playfulness to kind of diffuse this situation. And so my instant reaction was, "Honey, I can be whatever you like me to be." And I think that kind of attitude in the way that I've always been in terms of my professional career, that attitude has always kind of held true, really. I mean, I'm a very truthful person, and I think honesty and being your authentic self is so important.
Yeah.
And so diffusing with playful humour and creativity, I think, is a really nice way to kind of bring people on board, because it's a shock value to that person.
Yeah, yeah. And has that been received, or has that had an impact, do you think? Do you think you've been able to shift some perspectives with some of that playfulness and good humour?
I think so. I think optimistically visioning and playing and not really getting upset and taking that personally is really important.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm not sure what the impact of that's been, because I'm not interested in measuring it. I don't know what that person will do with that. And how they carry that into their own environments is up to them, I think.
Yeah.
But challenging them and doing it in a playful way, I think, is the only way to open that conversation in a productive way.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate that. I think that good sense of humour as well, and it's a huge coping mechanism. It's a way to engage and connect people too, that humanness.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, look, Alessandra, if you don't mind, I'll ask you the same question. Your experiences moving into the profession and academia, how have you found the reception from colleagues and in your personal experiences?
So, in academia, we are pretty lucky in the sense that it's a pretty open mind environment in general. So this is something that was very positive, and also the research that we are conducting at Monash is quite consistent with the overall vision of the university of, if you don't like something, just change it. And the same thing is what we want to apply also in the accounting profession. At the same time, I mean, there is always a level between explicit and implicit, so there is an explicit acceptance, but still there is a little bit of still a heteronormativity also in the accounting research profession. So this might also justify the quite dearth of little research around accounting and LGBTQI. So I think there is much that we can do, but definitely it's something that it's challenging and we're interested to keep working on it.
I love that you reference that implicit versus explicit. Do you think, so if we look at accounting specifically, do we think there's some, is that still some implicit acceptance, or is it becoming more explicit? Would you say that acceptance in the accounting community is reached explicit yet?
So I think that more and more is becoming acceptable, but still, I mean, accounting is not something that lives on another planet. So if we look at the Australian context, I mean, I joined Australia, I arrived in Australia last year during the marriage equality, and also that motivated our research because it's been a huge debate. And also in this only 12 months I've been here, I've noticed a great change in the sense how people refer or to the LGBTQI community. So having said this, and considering that accounting, the research in social science, I believe that changing the society are affecting the accounting profession, but still it's a long way to go. Even now with the few research we have conducted so far, we noticed that there are more and more networks and professional services firms, but still, most of them are still at the early stage. So
it's pure kind of recognition and acceptance of diversity, but we're not. Nothing's changing. We're not challenging anything. It's just we're accepting that there are people who are outside of what we consider to be the norm.
Yeah, I agree with you, definitely. I think also it is the first step to recognize, yeah, but we definitely need to work much more. So, like the event that tonight CP Australia is doing, so professional bodies, academics that go out of their ivory tower and contribute to the community have a major role also to influence the accounting profession.
Okay. I'm interested in, I'm always interested in role models. And Alessandro, I'm wondering if there was, you know, an LGBTIQ person, has there been a role model for you, someone, whether at a formative time or even now, a queer identifying person that you have seen as a role model to you?
So, to be honest, I don't really believe in role model. I'm a strong supporter of the post-structuralist approach to the society, so that we don't identify some elements as part of our society structure as fixed. So I believe that there are a number of sources of role models. So yes, I've been inspired by TV shows, movies, people that I encounter along my PhD program or academic career, but I think that a mix of elements is our influence in my choices.
And okay, well, I wanted to pick up there on film because we were just talking about a screening you've got coming up of the film Pride. So some interest in that film. I've been told I have to watch it by my wife repeatedly and I still haven't seen it. So yeah, picking up on those influences from all around us.
Right, exactly. And picking up on this, a bit of sponsorship. If anyone is in Melbourne the last week of August, we are screening Pride at Monash University during the Diversity and Inclusion Week, and it would be great to have a very playful and happy crowd to watch Pride together.
Good, go, register, go along. We'll put the link somewhere. So if you're listening to this, you can access it, go along and register in Melbourne. Well, thank you, Alessandra. Now, over to you, Nick. Are there any key people or influences for you, particularly at a formative time in your life?
Yeah, definitely at a formative time. I think just one person really stands out for me, and it was Derek Jarman.
Okay.
So Derek Jarman was an independent filmmaker and artist living and working in England during the 70s, 80s and 90s. And I guess he was inspirational for me because he always kind of crafted his own identity. And that was just really important. He took on really unusual independent projects that were not very common in the British film industry at the time. He lived in an area just below London, which is next to a nuclear power plant. So the dynamics between such a beautiful creative mind and heart, living right next to this kind of really sterile nuclear power plant was just fascinating. And I had the opportunity to, he passed away in the early 90s, but I emailed his partner and I was able to gain access and find where his house was. And I was able to visit and kind of, it was almost like this pilgrimage because he gave me the courage when I was in high school to actually be myself and live that authentic way and authentic life. And so for me, I think he stood out. He worked through significant hardship and challenge to live an authentic life filled with creative passion, and I drew on that source constantly in my work in accounting. Yeah.
What I need to connect with this director. I've not seen any of his work, and I'm now instantly fascinated and want to watch something and connect something right now.
Right.
What would be, so if I'm just being introduced to this director for the first time, pivotal work, what's the first thing I need to see?
I think Caravaggio was a really good film he made. He did a lot of work with Tilda Swinton, and his books are also his.
Oh, okay.
His books and autobiography was just quite insightful.
That inspiration and I look in exactly what the two of you are kind of speaking to is some of the motivation behind this podcast, because it's really just conversations with interesting people in a world in our world who are working in so many diverse areas and doing so many different things. It's just that reminder that you're never on your own in this journey, and the challenges and the resilience and the times when you have stood on your own and the times that you've struggled internally as well, what to share, what not to share, and actually how you feel and actually and your own identity, to ever see and connect with people who have been through, and especially those who document beautifully through art and other projects to share, it's so important, it's so empowering and can really shift us as well. So, okay, good, I have some new, I've got two new films to watch after this. Well, look, Jen, tonight's event is very much around really that starting point of that diversity inclusion in the profession. What will happen? What could happen if the profession actually doesn't start taking the concept of queering and queering accounting seriously? What do you see as being an impact if we don't have this conversation and we don't have it now?
My opinion is that the profession will just keep working in the past, trying to catch up with the present rather than looking at the future.
Right.
So it's something that we know that it's important. Everyone knows it. We just briefly mention it. We scratch the surface. But without really looking into the future and having a long-term perspective and including the queer perspective in the profession will still not being at the update with the present and especially catching up with the future.
Okay.
So I believe that the queer profession can not only, and the queer vision can not only bring some part that has been a bit hidden so far, but in the profession, but they can definitely contribute to face the challenges of the future. So
yeah,
it's definitely very important for the profession to include it.
Yeah, no, thank you, Alessandra. Because it's funny because I hear and I still hear people say, well, you know, in even coming up with this event, I've had conversations with colleagues and others to say, well, why do you need to do that at work? Why do you need to talk about that in a work context? Why do we need to talk about it in the professional? Like, it's fine, you're accepting, you're accepted, you know, this is your personal and private life and probably overtly associating sexuality or individual identity with queerness as well. But I'm interested in why it's important to bring this into the profession, what the answer to that is, because I think some of us will hear that. Colleagues will say, well, why do you have a pride flag on your desk? You know, why does that need to be at work? Can't that just be one part of your life and work is a different part? Sort of the workplace is asexual or is unconcerned with this. So that's to your point that it's not just about individuals feeling accepted. There's a potential loss to the profession in its ability to future think. So is that what we're missing if we don't talk about it in a professional context? We're missing that connection into the future.
I think that idea of queering accounting or having queering conversations in professional service firms is this kind of, it's a way to have more meaningful conversation.
Okay.
It's a way to engage people at a more humanistic level and literally have people around the table to debate some of these issues that the profession is literally facing.
Okay.
And so it's that ability to start a more meaningful conversation rather than recycling future-orientated accounting-based conversations that
yep.
we do hear globally, whether it's in Australia or the UK
yep.
or in Europe. We're having the same conversations, but we're not really seeing much kind of movement in different directions. And maybe if we have these queering conversations, it might start to open a box that hasn't been opened and we can start to have more meaningful conversations. I mean, the queering agenda, we've had a change agenda for decades.
Yeah.
We have gone through an entire movement for a very, very long time. We are change agents.
Yeah.
To not have that conversation with us, I mean, we're a valuable asset inside organisations.
Yeah.
And I think it's an asset that's very much underutilised.
And if you don't let people express themselves, if you just said, yeah, if you're LGBTQI, it's that what's happening at home, but in the workplace it's different, but in workplace is never different. It cannot
yes.
be neutral. It doesn't
yeah.
exist. It's a social environment. So you will need to conform to the heteronormative perspective. So coming to the office wearing your black suit, your white shirt, and having your blue desktop. So that is, and that will also limit your ability to contribute, for instance, to new projects, because maybe you will be a bit reluctant to express yourself with new ideas or be more willing to say, well, everyone says this, but I will stood up and I will say something different because they will listen to me, not both as a person, but also when I'm working. So definitely, I believe that it's very important that there is much more understanding of the queer perspective.
Thank you. And I love that, to back to your point of it's never neutral. You know, in a social environment, it's never neutral. And I love that this seems to be that sort of heteronormative view, isn't it? Is that it's neutral, not really realising that it's already shifted to one direction and not the other. Well, to wrap up, gentlemen, I will ask, I'd like to ask this as my final question. You know, with all that you're working on at the moment and everything that's brought you to where you are now, what sort of advice would you have for a young LGBTIQ identifying person who might be listening to this podcast? Would you have some insight to share with them? Nick, I'll start with you.
Yep, no problems. I mean, someone once told me, someone I really respect once told me, the best advice you can give someone is not really to give advice. And I think so much of what we need to be doing is listening to people and really finding out where they're coming from. And then saying, you know what, actually encouraging them to explore what interests them the most. And then saying, yeah, actually, I think you'd be really good at that. That's what you should be doing. But my biggest thing is just be yourself.
Yeah.
And just be brave enough to have those conversations. Don't choose to hide and don't choose what you do and don't say. Just say. Because you'll find your place. You will always find your place.
So whatever you feel like, so when you're listening to this, so just your comment before about the best advice on to give advice, listen to a person. So if someone's listening to this and there's that little voice that's speaking in the back of their mind that's telling them what they would be doing in a perfect world, that's what they should be doing.
They should go and find that perfect world and create. No, they shouldn't find it, they should create it.
Create it.
They should be creating it. Absolutely.
Thank you, Nick. And Alessandro?
I definitely agree with all Nick says. On top of this, I would say that it's very important, especially for LGBTQI working in academia, to go outside their safe comfort zone of journal publishing. It's important, but we need to accomplish our role, which is to inform the opinion, to inform policymakers, to go out of our ivory tower in order to really deconstruct the current society, in the sense we need to move forward the current structures that in a certain sense block most of, not most, but a lot of our actions. So I would encourage to go out, speak. Everyone will need to do its own work. Not everyone can revolutionize, but every little action can contribute to improve our workplace and the society in general.
Yeah, those small impacts and valuing what you're contributing and telling people about it and being open to sharing it. Well, look, thank you so much, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. Certainly for you joining me this first episode of LGBTIQ, Career Chats with Clever People Who Happen to Be Gay. But Will, thank you so much, gents. And I'm now we need to get ready because we are on stage in a very short period of time. So short, in fact, I have an Instagram-worthy buffet table I need to get onto ASAP. So thank you for listening and thank you so much for your time, gents. And, really appreciate it. Thanks very much. Thanks, Alessandro.